Hi there, and welcome to the Proud to Be of Rust and Glass podcast. Today's guest is Rachel Bowes, a local creative mind who started in music and theater at a young age. Since then, she's pivoted towards writing, and she writes both prose and poetry and is currently focused on a novel, which we'll touch a bit about later. But Rachel, it's so great to have this opportunity to sit and talk with you about writing, one of the things I love in life as well. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, so happy to be here.
As I mentioned, you started early in performance art. How has that sort of affected you as a creative now?
That's a great question. I think it's made me more open to other art. I think a lot of artists find themselves in their silos of, you know, what they're focused on. And I'm really grateful to have been in a lot of other silos, and I'm still interested in watching performance and seeing how that affects everyone. Mm-hmm. Same goes for visual. I guess it gives me appreciation of everything.
Yeah, I love that. Do you have any performers or any specific types of performances now that you enjoy to watch that sort of inspire you?
Yeah, I'm, I guess right now my genre would be children's musicals because I'm trying to get my son into it.
Oh, very cool.
He's 8 and has all of the natural tendencies that I would expect him to be a triple threat. So, you know, got to explore it.
You see a little bit of yourself at that age in him already?
I do, yeah.
That's got to be, as a mom, that's got to be an amazing feeling.
It is. It's great that, you know, we can connect with each other on a creative level. We have our creative time where we just sit down and do whatever the heck we feel like, but there's no screens. There's nothing but our time to just be there together with each other and use our imaginations. And it's so cool to see what it looks like to have the support from the other side. I didn't grow up with parents that were artists, so having that perspective is just so cool.
It does make a huge difference. It absolutely does. When did you first start getting into the performance arts?
I think it just happened so young because my family wanted me to be active. And so, you know, I was introduced to it with theater, musicals, when I was around the age of 5 or 10. From there, it defined my life. It defined, like, everything I wanted to be, just the impact that it has on audiences and the impact it has on me, being able to understand what's going on in my head and everyone else is sitting out there too.
Do you have any of the performances that you were involved in early on that sort of stick out as sort of a defining moment for you?
Yeah, I would say, this is a cool ghost story, actually.
Oh, nice.
If we can.
I like ghost stories.
So when I think I was maybe 8 or 10 around that age, I did the Sleeping Beauty Ballet at the Collingwood. And it was, I was just, you know, background cast or whatever. And it was such a cool experience to be around all those people in this old building. Well, I think that's where I started building my community in this area and just getting to know other artists and how that impacted me. But on the ghost story end, we were downstairs getting ready for the show, and we, you know, could just feel something there with us. You know, there's lots of, like, nun rumors there, right? That's what we think's haunting the Collingwood.
Yeah, and anybody who doesn't know, the Collingwood Arts Center is notorious around here for haunting stories and for ghosts. And I mean, it's a beautiful building, but you can definitely get that.
Oh, you get that vibe. It's pretty creepy. So we're down there getting ready for the show, and one of the girls says she sees something. We're young, you know, but I believe her. And so we're all, like, affected by this. We go out on stage and all of us are actually shaking, like, as we're dancing, because we're so scared from this experience. And
not because of stage fright either. It sounds like it.
No, although I'm sure I had my fair share, as we all do.
That's amazing. That's really funny that, I mean, anybody watching probably had no idea.
Yeah.
What happened beforehand, and you still got to get out there and sell it for them, even though this creepy nun's, you know, looking over your shoulder.
Exactly. We had to worry about our nuns back there, but it happened to work out for the theme and everything, because this was the scene where the big dragon comes in and knocks everything down.
Oh, very cool. Good timing, man.
Yeah.
Good timing. So writing and performance are undeniably completely different crafts.
Absolutely.
You get out on stage, it's not just you, it's everybody who's watching, it's everybody who you're performing with. It's the greater picture of the story that you're telling through each individual scene. But writing, really, you're in your own head. How were you able to sort of transition from the performance to the writing?
I think writing gave me a platform that performance just didn't offer to me. I did write music at one point, but it doesn't translate the same. I think writing's an opportunity to get everything down on paper that we don't think about. I think as writers, we're drawn to wanting to expose, if not communities around us, then thoughts that we typically don't like to share with each other. Mm-hmm. We like to make people uncomfortable. and I think performance art is comfortability, because you're operating like in these very familiar large themes, large tones to more easily connect with your audience in a short amount of time. And I think that's kind of what drew me to writing, because I didn't like that I didn't talk about that stuff.
Right.
in performance art.
You sort of start to feel a little bottled up, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did you first start writing?
I was pretty young. I thought I was cool, like, in middle school when I wrote down a little novel and shared it with my English teacher. And I was like, hey, this is neat, right? Like, you know, can you just confirm for me that maybe there's something here? Because I just realized I was passionate about mm-hmm. it. And even before then, I was creating like little books at home with like my own images and stories. But I would say I had some really incredible influences at high school that propelled me to be more focused on it and supported me in a way where, even if you don't want to do this for a career, like, why don't we explore this as being a professional artist, mm-hmm. And how you can make that happen for yourself? So one of my high school teachers in creative writing at Toledo School for the Arts, Justin Longacre, was...
Justin's amazing, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know Justin.
Yes, he is an incredible person.
I never had him as a teacher, but he helped of Rust and Glass get going very early on. Mm-hmm. We had some of the TSA students that were involved with that project, and he was always just like, yeah, this sounds amazing. Let's see what we can do to make it happen.
Yeah.
Kind of guy. So
he's incredible. And just like he did for Rust and Glass, he kind of did for me as an individual, you know, supported me in every way I could hope, and which led me to decide to get my bachelor's in creative writing, where I found some even, I mean, not cooler, but just as cool mentors at BGSU that have done the same. And I think that it's been a recent reflection of mine how the community surrounding me has really gotten me on the path that I'm on now. Mm-hmm. Any other path I would have been on, I wouldn't have had these incredible, impactful people. And, right. And who knows where I would have been.
Right.
I probably wouldn't be writing today.
Right. Yeah, that's really important to remember, that if you have something that you're passionate about, but you don't have anybody in your corner, it's sort of much more difficult to keep it going, and it fizzles away much easier. So mm-hmm. it's really cool that you had that at an early age. It sounds like you still do to this day.
Yeah.
Very, very good to have a support network that builds up early on, gets to see you evolve, and then is still there for you when, you know, you are present. What do you find that you revisit in your writing? Do you have like any themes that come up? Do you have anything that really permeates through like your body of work? Are you kind of all over the place? Or
yeah, I have all the fun themes in my writing, of course, all the lighthearted things like death and you know, existential dread and
of course.
All that good stuff. Well, I would say grief is something I come back to pretty often, or I guess just a sense of loneliness, like living in a body where you're not feeling connected to anyone around you. And I think that's what you get from reading, is mm-hmm. Feeling part of something that you can't really think about every day,
right,
that you don't get to experience around yourself. It's kind of like creating a quiet community. And I try to be reflective of that when I'm writing. So if I'm really grappling with something, or there's just a reoccurring theme in my life, I feel like that's speaking to me as something that needs to be on paper. So it can vary, you know. Mm-hmm. I think one of the more common themes I'm drawn to with poetry is how emotions prolonged over time or particular struggles will start to change your physicality. So I wrote a chapbook series on kind of like how motherhood affects your physicality, affects your brain, how everything's changing, you're falling apart. It's kind of like your body's going through these seasons. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of spread itself throughout my poetry.
Okay. And this type of writing, is this a way for you to express it to others, or is it primarily a way for you to sort of unpack it on your own?
I guess it's a combination of both. I feel like I'm always discovering something as I'm writing. So I do find myself unpacking, and I do have a separate notebook for everything I'm going to take to my therapist. Right.
Writing is kind of a form of therapy, but that sometimes it's not quite enough. I mean, yeah. You sort of do need that immediate feedback if you are experiencing any of these issues, but...
Right.
Without writing, do you think you would really know yourself that well?
Definitely not. Absolutely not. I think it's allowed myself to build like an introspective narrative in my head. And I think people who aren't writing don't experience that. It's like how you build that skill. It's how you build being reflective. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It sounds so canned and cliched, but like journaling is really useful.
It is.
Especially... You know, if you are struggling with getting out your emotions and your thoughts and things like that, but take it one step further, write a novel, right?
Exactly.
Which is something you're working on right now.
It is.
What can you tell us about your novel and your novel writing process?
The process. Wow. What a process. I
scribbling in notepads in the yeah. corner when you get a second, right?
Yeah, I think that question makes writers sweat because mm-hmm. we're like, what's that? That's not something we talk about a lot. But I just so happen to be very type A and have dealt a lot with project management in my career. Mm-hmm. So I'm a freak, and I have an Excel table where I draw out the certain parts of my story that I want to reach a specific goal by a certain date. And I have, you know, a requirement of words that I write per week or per day, however that looks like for me. And the problem with that is it's always changing, you know, although I have like this perception of how long I expect that to take me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense because I actually started out this novel in third person and then just a few weeks ago decided that's not the perspective I should be writing in. And now I'm changing everything to first. That's kind of like starting over.
Right. It really is. There's a lot that you have to consider when you're doing that.
Yeah.
And also, not to mention, you could put everything in a pretty table. You could have charts, graphs, you know, 150-page outlines,
mm-hmm.
and then life.
And then life.
Right?
Yes.
You can't really anticipate, especially as a parent, especially as somebody who is writing outside of a full-time job or a day job, you can't really ever anticipate what's going to be thrown your way.
Yeah.
So you can only hope for the best when you're working on these creative projects, right?
Absolutely. And I'm an account manager at Metzger's, and you know, that type of work really fluctuates. Mm-hmm. Like some days I'm going to have to be working at least 80 to 90 hours a week to get all my projects on a good track, and I'm not touching my novel.
Right.
So yeah, it's not really anything we can plan for. I suppose that's the constant artist struggle. Like, how do I get in a space where I'm going to be able to put timelines and metrics to my success? And you can't.
Right. No, it's, you want to. You really, really, really want to.
Yeah.
Is there anything, I know it sounds like it's still in development stage, it's mm-hmm. still being rewritten. Is there anything about the novel itself that you can tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. So this novel was inspired by a little bit of my family history. So my family was part of a small town around here that ran an industry that fueled that town financially.
Okay.
And then it all fell apart. Well, this kind of explores what that looks like to have the generational baggage of, you know, all of those lives that got destroyed in the wake of your family's poor decisions. Mm-hmm. And it also explores a lot of the aftermath of the Rust Belt that we just don't talk about a lot. You know, the desolation of communities because of our opioid epidemics. And it basically just explores everything that the Midwest is experiencing and the transition that we're also experiencing in our generation, where we found ourselves so separated from any kind of familial, like, traditions. Mm-hmm. I think we're at a point where we're separating from our, like, generational identities, and we have a chance to create something new.
Mm-hmm. Some of that separation is maybe for the best. Some of it not so much so. And it is very, I feel that in my family too, where we have a young family and we're trying to find new traditions. And it's very odd because usually all that stuff is passed down. And so that sounds fascinating. You'll have to definitely keep us posted
on
the progress and on when it's coming out so we can give it a read. I mean, that's a lot of stuff that of Rust and Glass and being a creative in this region really embodies. So that sounds amazing.
Yeah,
so thanks for sharing that with us. Speaking of the region and the creative area and what it embodies, what makes you proud to be of Rust and Glass? What makes you really like to be a part of this creative community?
I think my favorite thing about it is it's porous. We're a good enough size that we can be cool if we try, but like to other cities, you know. But that also gives us the opportunity, like being small enough to absorb all of these other communities, all of these other traditions. I know a lot of people who've come here from out of state and they found like their niche because we have open arms.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like that. I think everything should be kind. I think everything should be open-hearted and welcoming. And I definitely feel that here.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And you said, you know, we do have the potential to be cool.
Yeah.
But what's nice is we don't have to be.
I mean, no.
A lot of the people I know that are consistently making good art, consistently writing, are kind of doing their own thing. And they have the mm-hmm. room to do that. And they have a little bit of support to do that. Whereas, you know, in a lot of the bigger, more established artistic communities, it's you got to fit in these boxes.
Yes.
And if you don't fit in these boxes, no thank you. So here you can kind of be yourself, which is amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have, as somebody who's kind of gone through the gamut of creativity from your performances to writing, obviously had some struggles along the way, but really found yourself through that process, do you have any advice or words of wisdom for anybody who might be considering getting into the arts, who is in the arts and maybe struggling, or just anybody who could use a little bit of wisdom?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd consider myself wise, but I'd say I'd try. I think it's all about community. Mm-hmm. And if you're finding yourself alone or you're finding yourself discouraged in your process, don't be afraid to reach out, because we're all like that. I know there have been days where I wish someone would have hopped in my inbox as an artist and encouraged me. And it's really hard for us to ask for that. But don't be afraid to, because I want to hear somebody else struggling. I want to hear that we're not alone, and maybe I can send you some prompts to help you.
Right.
Maybe we can work through it together.
That was going to be kind of my follow-up. How do you give back to a community that's been so supportive of you?
I try to be receptive to all the arts. So I find myself at, you know, art commission loops and out in the community, trying to support and purchase everything I can afford, right? But which is nothing.
Yeah, I was gonna say sometimes it's not a lot, but
not a lot.
Even a print or even you know, a book from time to time helps out a lot. Especially, you know, I had a while where I don't think I had sold a book forever, and some random person came and bought one book for $10. And did it pay for the fee for the event? Absolutely not. But it, you know, it lifted my spirits quite a bit, and
exactly.
it goes a long way. So
it does. It does. And I think other artists also just need to be shouted out more. Like mm-hmm. if I see an artist in the community that I think would fit perfect for a project that happens to fit into maybe even marketing mainstream, let's get together. Let's make a brand guide. I think you're the perfect person for it. But the coolest thing that I've been involved in and giving back to the community is the Swell magazine. We just recently published our first issue. Yeah, she went to print. Very exciting. We're going to be publishing our second issue in January. So please stay up to date with our team on that.
What exactly is Swell, and where can people check it out?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Swell is a collection of artists throughout the nation. We are built off of the Social Bee brand, which is a freelance agency. We basically house a bunch of artists that we can recommend to people for projects. But the magazine itself features art without boundaries. We try to include artists of all creeds and color, regardless of what kind of boundaries we feel that art might fit into. I know one of my struggles being in the academic creative community is all of these guidelines. And
there's those boxes again. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And just because this panel says, your art isn't fine enough for us, it shouldn't be considered any less important. Swell wants to publish it. Mm-hmm. We want everyone to be heard, and we don't want art to have borders.
Beautiful. I love that. Just that last phrase, we don't want art to have borders. I think that is absolutely incredible. Beyond that, is there anywhere anybody can follow along with kind of what you're doing personally?
No, not myself personally. I'm really bad at plugging myself. I have lots of publications on my LinkedIn. If you guys want to check it out, I'll give you the link to that. I've been in some cool books like Churon Review. That's probably one of the coolest magazines I'm proudest of being
cool.
featured in. But if you want to follow along with Swell, please follow our Social Bee community, which is found on Facebook. We also have a website, LinkedIn, Instagram, all of those good stuff.
Cool. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, hey, it's been amazing talking with you about your creative journey. I can't wait to see where you're going with it next. And thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us today.
Thanks for having me. Loved it.
This has been today's episode of Proud to Be of Rust and Glass. Rachel Bowes proves that oftentimes our art is more than just art. A lot of times, art is a path to self-discovery, a way to unpack all the things that life throws at us. Another great example of a creative with multiple talents, Rachel has been busy making great art in Northwest Ohio for as long as she can remember, and we're so excited to see what she does next. Again, I am your host and producer, Curtis Dieter. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you want to join the conversation, check us out at wgte.org/rustandglass. Until next time, thanks for listening. Now go forth and create.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.